Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:10 British Summer Time. Today is July 31st. Well, this has been a very interesting month. I suppose I should mention today being Friday, of course, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But really, this has been a remarkable month for stock markets. We saw that back on July 13th, that the majority of stock markets reversed the decline or the consolidation that they'd been in for about 6 weeks. And since the middle of the month, we have seen an impressive advance right across stock markets, leading markets breaking upwards from 6 week to 2 month ranges, and the majority of lagging markets testing the upper side of their bases as we come to the end of this month. This was also an interesting month in the bond markets. We had a lot of speculation as to how the market would handle the incredible amount of supply that's about to hit this market, and it reacted rather favorably, and we're ending the month with a rally across the boards in the government bond prices. This month has seen significant weakness for the US dollar, particularly against comparatively strong currencies such as the Canadian dollar or the Australian dollar. The strongest currencies out there are ones that have some sort of link to physical commodities. And we saw that the dollar weakened quite considerably throughout the month against some of those currencies, steadied somewhat earlier this week, but is closing out this month on its low. What helped to spark this was news today that the US economy is growing slower than had perhaps been priced into markets, at least into the debt market. So there is little to no chance that we're going to see interest rates rising anytime soon. That's bad for the dollar, but has been viewed comparatively well by bond and stock markets. And this was also an interesting month in terms of what industrial metals have been doing. They continue to range higher. The majority of them hit new recovery highs in here today, and really they would need to take out their progression of higher lows. We know that the industrial metal complex, just from the way it is traded historically, is less likely to maintain upward breaks. Obviously, there will be periods of time when it will accelerate to the upside and post remarkably consistent moves, but the majority of the time they are volatile and the upward breaks are not sustained. So what we're looking for confirmation that the industrial metal bull market remains intact is that they hold the progression of higher lows. This has also been a month which has been rather difficult for the precious metal complex. We've seen, for example, that gold rallied in the early part of the month from about 900 to 950 and gave up much of that advance in the latter half of the month, particularly this week, but rallying very well in here today, back up to $954. We also see silver back up to the $14 level. Platinum did well today as well, back above $1,200. So all positive across the commodity sector. In the soft commodities, we've seen that the vast majority of those soft commodities, particularly the grain complex, came off at some point this month, and the grains have been testing the lower side of their base formations for much of the last 2 weeks. Soybeans had a large upper dynamic yesterday, followed through on that today, does suggest that we're going to see these rally from the lower side of their ranges. So, very interesting things going on in markets, and with a word for the stock markets, we see that Wall Street is the S&P is below 1,000, and the DAX and the FTSE are both within striking distance or very close to the upper side of their bases. It's very much a will it or won't it type of market that we have in here. Will it or won't it? From the point of view, it's because this is the question that investors will be asking themselves. We've seen these markets come up and test the upper side of their bases on a number of occasions over the last 7 or 8 months, and they failed at these levels in the past. Now, the Background right now is looking very favorable, and there is certainly potential for these markets to sustain moves to the upside. But they really do need to do that to start to convert people back into this bullish hypothesis. And markets have been rallying really quite impressively for 2 weeks now. And prior to the 6 week consolidation, they rallied very impressively from March to June. For leading markets, we see that a large number of those leading markets in Asia and commodity producing Latin America are either testing the upper side of their ranges or they're breaking upwards in really rather emphatic fashion, particularly some of those Asian markets, such as Hong Kong or Indonesia, or indeed China, for example. And downward dynamics are needed to check these advances beyond brief pauses. And MDL stops are likely the order of the day because we have well-defined trading ranges. We've had an emphatic breakout from the trading range, and it would need to come back into that range and through halfway through that range to really start to ask questions about the sustainability of these advances. And even when we do begin to see a larger correction for some of these markets, then it's likely to be limited to a reversion to the 200-day moving average, which has turned upwards. What we're met with across the wide swathe of equity markets is that we have bull market activity. While we are still climbing the wall of worry on the economic front, and while there is a number of bearish scenarios that can be argued with varying degrees of credibility, what we need to focus on primarily is the chart action, and the chart action is undeniably bullish for the vast majority of stock markets. I can't think of one market that is breaking to new lows. The worst performers are testing the upper sides of their ranges or rallying strongly, and the better performers are breaking upwards. The other thing that we need to keep an eye on, apart from the chart action, is monetary policy, because monetary policy around the world is remarkably accommodative. And we see interest rates, particularly in the OECD, at rock bottom levels. Even in countries such as China, which has had a massive stimulus package and has been highly effective in implementing that stimulus package, monetary policy is still quite accommodative. And they're only beginning to talk about removing some of that stimulus. With the type of news such as that we got today, that the US economy is recovering slower than some were expecting, the chances that we're going to have interest rates rising or this excess liquidity being sanitized out of the system anytime soon is relatively remote. And that allows an opportunity for markets to continue to advance. The easy money, low interest rate environment that is being provided to the financial to financial institutions is still there, and that situation is unlikely to change in the near future. That allows the speculative flows that are out there to move back towards what would be considered risky type assets. And we continue to see that the vast pile of cash that was built up during the panic that we had last year is slowly finding its way back into these markets. And the fact that we've seen so many equity markets in particular forming consistent advances, and something we talk about at length at the chart seminar, is that the most consistent advances are consistent because of they have the biggest gap between supply and demand. And with these consistent patterns that we're seeing in the markets right now, That is an indication that there is a big gap between supply and demand in the short term. In the short term, we also see that some of these markets are overbought and probably in need of a pullback and consolidation towards their 200-day moving averages. But action this week suggests that it isn't going to happen just yet. But we, longer term thinking, we are in a two-tier stock market environment because on the one hand we have lagging markets, which are the USA, large parts of Europe, which are having difficulty breaking upwards and are just testing the upper sides of their bases now. And then we have commodity producing Latin America and Asia, which are performing spectacularly well against this background, which were less leveraged than the OECD going into this crisis and have potential to leverage up their economies going forward. They're leading the way, not only in terms of stock market performance, but in terms of GDP growth and in terms of their leadership, their timing that they're breaking upwards first. They found support first. They built their bases first. They broke upwards first. They consolidated first. They're breaking upwards again first. So leaders in any bull market lead for a reason. We know what the fundamental reasons are behind the outperformance of commodity producing Latin America and the population centers of Asia. And they are the markets that are likely to drive the next bull market. Now, there is potential that asset price inflation can develop over the coming years, and that there is potential for another new bubble to develop, but that bubble is unlikely to be in the technology sector. While although technology is a leading cyclical sector and has performed extraordinarily well against the background of the credit crisis, and of course, historically, technology does perform in a low interest rate environment, but in secular terms, we can look towards the leading markets out there today as those that have the best potential to develop into asset bubbles or manias. Now, we are just coming out of a massive unwinding of leverage in the OECD, and it might seem inopportune to be talking about asset bubbles in the offing in other markets, because these manias by definition tend to go too far, and excess leverage is implemented, but it is also driven by a real fundamental story. And that fundamental story for these countries is the greatest urbanization in history. Not just millions, but billions of new consumers entering the global economy. The per capita income of these emerging countries getting up past 1,000, and China today is at 6,000. So they're entering the middle expenditure, or the middle area of GDP growth, and associated with that is higher consumption, and the percentage or the per capita consumption of raw materials and commodities and finished goods is going to increase over time as these emerging economies finally begin to actually emerge. We have talked in the past about progressing and regressing economies, and certainly commodity producing Latin America and large parts of Asia are in the progressing camp. With this vast number of people, there is huge potential for the capitalizations of their markets to increase remarkably over the coming decades. This doesn't mean that they're going to decouple. Wall Street is still and will remain the largest pool of liquidity for a very long time to come. But what we are seeing is a multipolar world where the centers of economic gravity are shifting. And while there is no argument to say that Asia and or that China and India, for example, are going to get back to their percentage of GDP that they held in the 1600s. That's simply not possible because we have other centers of gravity in the world today, and Europe and the USA were non-existent at that time in terms of their economic might. But what we are going to have is significant growth in these regions, and that we are going to have competing centers of economic and manufacturing excellence in the world, and that we are entering a more uncertain place. But what we can almost certainly count on is that the capitalization of these markets is going to be considerably larger going forward. And this is a move that is really only in its infancy. We are following the crisis that we're coming through. People are increasingly starting to look around and say, well, which countries have the best economic or civil governance, but which also have the corporate governance? Now, a number of emerging markets probably aren't there yet in terms of civil governance, but in terms of economic governance and increasingly corporate governance, they are making leaps and bounds in terms of their progress. And in the West, we need to have a serious discussion about how we want to run our economies going forward, and that is a discussion that is taking place at the moment. And certainly, the type of culture that got us into this mess in the first place, we need to get away from that type of disregard for the long-term well-being of our societies and economies. But that is something that they have thought about long and hard in some of these emerging economies because they had no other choice. And they are certainly, if not on a par, they are beginning to overtake the West in terms of economic governance and to an extent corporate governance. This has a marked influence on demand for commodities, because if we have these countries bringing billions of new people out of abject poverty and into the middle income bracket, their consumption of raw materials is likely to go up on a consistent basis for decades to come. And while the commodity complex is always going to be volatile because of the forces that go into getting these things to market, but also because they are relatively small and relatively thinly traded when compared to the bond or stock markets, we've seen an enormous shakeout in commodity prices, but we've also seen that they are finding support. They are breaking upwards from base formations, and progressions of higher lows are in place. And these are the foundations of new bull markets. And with that evidence in place, we can say with increasing degrees of confidence that the commodity bull market has been reasserted. Whether we see these markets going back up to test their highs this year, next year, or the year after, it isn't so much a case or a question of if anymore, but when do these markets go up to test their highs and set new highs? What could put a spanner in the works for some of these commodities is that we've had speculation attempting, in one regard, to corner the market and push it higher. And if that is seen to be interfering with the ability of governments to feed their people, or is impinging the ability of businesses to get the raw materials that they need, well, we can anticipate that there is going to be some further regulation on how the commodity complex is traded. But there is, I think, no need to worry about that in the very short term. I think there is always going to be a place for speculators, if for no other reason than to add liquidity. And the worst case scenario is that they may ban the buying and holding of long dated futures contracts rather than the trading of these contracts. And this leads us to precious metals, because precious metals are the one hard money. And what we've seen over the last decades has been consistent additions of excess liquidity into the markets. And particularly over the last decade, central banks have been rather slow to remove that liquidity from the market. And for every dollar they print out of thin air, that makes all those dollars in circulation worth just that little bit less. And investors are beginning to look around and say that they want to have their capital invested in something concrete. And gold is the one true hard money in association with the other precious metals. With the vast quantity of cash that is going to have to be printed in order to get some of the worst affected economies out of the economic mess that they're in, the argument for the validity of fiat money will become increasingly trite, because central bankers are, for all intents and purposes, closet inflationists. If you've got debt outstanding in a country that is a magnitude of the GDP of that country, inflation is really the only way to get out from underneath it. And with that inflation, gold is a reliable source of firm value. That also has implications for the bond markets, because while they are rallying from the lower side of their ranges today, and today's upward dynamics are certainly checking the declines that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, and probably putting at least a short-term floor under this market, the likelihood that the bond markets are going to be able to accept the trillions of dollars in, and of course every other currency, that is being flooded into this market is increasingly unlikely. In which case, we are not too far away from investors beginning to ask for a greater yield. And that type of demand will probably boil over if, when we begin to see that economies are picking up and the velocity of money begins to pick up, and that liquidity that is now in the system isn't withdrawn promptly. Central bankers are in a bit of a bind, because they have added huge quantities of liquidity into the system. And that has been in an effort to make up for the drop-off in the velocity of money. However, they are also at the political whim that they are going to come under severe pressure when we do begin to see that economies are growing once more. They're going to be under significant pressure to make sure that they don't raise interest rates too promptly, that they don't sanitize the liquidity in the system too quickly, because they don't want to make the same mistake that Japan made, which was to not add enough liquidity in the first place and then to take it out too early. Well, they've added plenty on this occasion. They haven't made that mistake. But they're going to be slow to remove it from the system. And having a higher degree of inflation over the medium term may not be such a bad thing in the eyes of some of these central banks, from the point of view that it will help to lessen the impact of having to pay off all that debt that they have taken on and are going to take on over the next years. So there is the strong possibility that, and it's a probability rather than a possibility, that interest rates, that the yield on long-dated bonds bottomed last year, that we're probably unlikely to see yields at 2% on a US Treasury anytime in the near, medium term, or long term future. That while 4% was probably a little bit too high in the short to medium term, we're unlikely to see 2% anytime soon. And that is going to have repercussions for the wider market, because yields haven't been a real problem for stock markets for a long time. We occasionally see that government bond yields rise, they become competitive with the stock market, and the stock market falls back, and then interest rates are dropped to help support the stock market. But over the last 30 years, yields have been falling consistently. They topped out in the early 80s and they've been falling until 2009. And that means that over the long term, they haven't really been competitive with stock markets. But that could easily be changing. There is a strong likelihood that we could see yields basing for a period of time. But over the long term, it is only a matter of time before they start to push upwards again. That could be in a few years, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years before that base formation is complete. But the bottom of a bear market is the beginning of a new bull market. And a new bull market, or a new bear market in yield, in prices, is characterized by disbelief that it could ever occur. And that is probably where we are with government bonds today. There are, of course, legitimate questions being asked about just how much liquidity and how many bonds they can put into the system without causing an inflationary problem. And we are going to have the answer to that question probably in the next year, if not year and a half, because when the global economy begins to pick upwards once more, then how central banks deal with that is going to ask a lot of questions. And of course, you can't just go off and print trillions of dollars without the dollars in existence losing some of their value. And particularly today, we saw that the dollar lost some of its value, and it's testing the lower side of its ranges against a large number of currencies, having already become quite weak from the middle of this month, steadying somewhat earlier this week, but giving it all up today. There is potential for the dollar to get significantly weaker from here. I'm not touting a dollar crisis for one very simple reason, and that is for every cent that the dollar drops, all the other currencies in the world get stronger. And in this competitive world of devaluation as well as globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency, and others are likely to want it or want a weaker one more than the rest. And at the moment, that is the USA. Having a weaker currency is probably not something that people there is a lot of gnashing of teeth about in Washington. And we're likely to see this dollar get weaker from here, and that will be a fundamental boost to the commodity complex. But I'm not thinking about a dollar crisis, because as the dollar gets weaker, all the other currencies in the world will be getting stronger against it. That's the last thing they want. In which case, if the dollar really does get into trouble, multilateral intervention to support it is a virtual surety. And since central banks print the money, they can probably control it to an extent. So we can see that the dollar is likely to get weaker. And if other central banks see that it's getting weaker and pump up their own quantitative easing to make sure that it doesn't affect their own domestic currency overly, then we could easily start to see some of the precious metals appreciating in a wide range of currencies, because we haven't seen that for a while. While gold has been rallying from $900 to $950, it didn't perform particularly well against some of the stronger currencies in the world. But in the past, when we've seen that gold has completed these 18-month ranges, and we're relatively close to the end of one of those 18-month ranges today, it has begun to appreciate in all currencies, because investors around the world are increasingly at that point beginning to look towards a hard physical asset to make up for the diminution in the buying power of their domestic currency. And that is when gold really starts to break up and put in a serious outperformance. We're probably not there just yet, but there's a strong likelihood that we are going to see some type of advance similar to what we've seen on previous occasions later this year. And that is likely to be a very powerful breakout, but is unlikely to occur until gold starts to appreciate in a wide range of other currencies. Oil is also very important in here. It rallied extremely well up to about $74 and has been ranging somewhat lower for the last 2 months. It has firmed considerably in the last 2 days and looks like it's going to take out its progression of lower highs over the last couple of months, in which case the chances that it can reassert its uptrend turns into sooner rather than later type of predictions. And over the medium to longer term, well, oil bottomed along with the rest of the commodity complex late last year and early this year. It's broken upwards from its base. It's consolidated that advance quite consistently and has had a relatively shallow reaction and has firmed up relatively well in the last couple of days, found support above $60, and this is bull market action. We can expect oil to be higher a year from now, probably 5 years from now, probably 10 years from now. And while it may take some time to get back up to the high that we saw last year, because this is bull market type activity that we're seeing, the question is very much a question of when, as opposed to if it moves to new highs. And that will of course be impacted by the global economy, by the value of the dollar, because one of the arguments that got gold up to that big high near $150 in the first place was that it was a real hard asset and integral to the global economy. And of course, speculation. If we do start to see the oil market beginning to accelerate higher, then speculators, of course, will have had a role in that. But that can be said of every acceleration in every market, because they don't accelerate without at least some of the people speculating in that market. So to wrap things up, we remain in a bullish environment. We know that stock markets are somewhat overextended, but we have no evidence that this advance is over. We see that the dollar appears to be on the verge of getting weaker. That will be a fundamental support for the commodity markets, and we already see evidence that of that support in a large number of them. And there is potential for some of the fundamentally stronger currencies to appreciate quite considerably. In the currency markets, it is going to be telling to watch what central bankers are saying, because as a subscriber quoted yesterday in one of the comments of the day, happiness in the currency markets or the forex markets is having the trend and the central bank on your side. And at the moment, there aren't many countries who want a strong currency. So it will be worth watching what central banks and politicians are saying about a currency, because they are more than apt at talking down their currencies. And if that doesn't work, then we could see them attempting to sell their own currency in the market to attempt to make it weaker. In the bond markets, they were a little bit oversold. They have bounced from the lower side of their ranges. And because interest rates are unlikely to be rising anytime soon, that could provide a support to the bond market in the short to medium term. Over the longer term, they are unlikely to be a good long-term investment. At least sovereign debt is unlikely to be a good long-term investment. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.